town of our fear, old stranger, one fine day.
It is time now for the Border News Roundup. Friday mornings at this time, we get a chance to check in with Marshall Helmberger. Marshall's the editor and the publisher of the Timberjay. It's a newspaper serving northeastern Minnesota. Good morning, Marshall. Thanks for being back.
Well, happy to be here, Heidi.
Well, let's talk first about a story you covered this week that's pretty complicated, and I want you to help me understand it. Some changes from the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency when it comes to water. What's new there?
These changes have actually been in the works for a while, and it's currently in the public comment stage. And what the MPC is proposing is to change its Class 3 and 4 water rules. And this, like you said, it's complicated. Minnesota classifies its waters based on what's known as their beneficial use. And Class 3 and Class 4 waters are for waters that are used or potentially could be used for industry or for agriculture. And most of these different classifications of water, they include both a numeric standard, which those are the kinds of standards we normally expect, such as, you know, how many milligrams per liter of a pollutant can be discharged by a company or a polluter of some kind, and then also a narrative standard, which is more of a just a word description of the type of water or quality of water that should be obtained based on that classification. And it generally, the numeric standards are ones that you can relatively easily enforce because you can measure the water and they're either over or under their limit. Narrative standards, of course, are much more subject to interpretation. So they generally are, you know, permits that only include narrative standards are a little bit problematic. What the MPC is proposing is to largely get rid of the numeric standards for Class 3 and Class 4 waters, and they would replace that with narrative standards, and then they would use what's called a translator to translate the narrative standards or descriptions into some kind of a numeric limit that would be then written into a permit. In most cases, and the MPCA does not deny this, and they believe that in most cases, this means that companies will be subject to lower limits, more liberal limits, I guess, on pollution than what they had been dealing with before. I mean, so in a sense, they're able to pollute more under these changes that the MPCA is proposing. And, you know, so they would eliminate many numeric standards for a whole long list of pollutants. And the upshot of this is that, you know, mining companies on the Iron Range, which have certainly been concerned about the pollution standards and being able to meet them, they likely would have to do much less cleanup than they would under current rules. And so they're obviously, not surprisingly, in support of some of these changes for the most part. And, you know, not only that, but I mean, even just the change in the narrative standards on these Class 3 and 4 waters, it's pretty interesting. You know, right now there's a Class 3A water. Is supposed to be maintained at a quality, at a sufficient quality to use without chemical treatment, except softening for groundwater, for most industrial purposes for which a high quality of water is required. That's the current narrative standard in Class 3A. Now, under the part of the change here, or one of the changes that the MPC is proposing, is that now that narrative would be eliminated, and all classes of Class 3 water, there's A, B, and C, would be, those three different classes would be eliminated and it would all be just Class 3. And the narrative that would be installed instead would be that water could be maintained at a quality to be used, quote, for industrial purposes to avoid severe fouling, corrosion, or scaling. So, you know, rather than talking about a, you know, a higher quality of water where no chemical treatment is required. This new standard would basically say, as long as it's not, fouling or corroding your machinery, it's okay. And I think most people would think, you know, that's a little bit lower standard. So we're kind of lowering the bar here. And there's some other examples as well of that. So, I mean, I think these changes are a little bit problematic. And I know it certainly caught the attention of some environmental groups and some of the native bands in the area in northern Minnesota. And they are opposing these changes, but there's going to be a lot of support for them as well. I know most of the Iron Range cities up here have sent letters of support for this, and they have a variety of concerns, particularly around the mining issue. So they, see the lessening of regulation on the mining industry as being beneficial to the local economy. And they're also concerned in some cases, and that's why a number of cities are supportive, is they think that this will ease the regulatory burden for their wastewater treatment facilities. So there's a number of parties that stand to benefit from these changes. The ag producers also, especially agricultural processing facilities, they tend to run into issues with water discharge as well. And so this might ease the burden on them. But of course, on the other side, it's at what cost to the water quality in Minnesota. So interesting change. It's in the public comment period through February 24th. And it'd probably be sometime this summer before we might have a final decision by the MPCA.
Okay. So people can, either way they think on this, you can comment on it for the Pollution Control Agency.
Till February 24th, yes.
Okay. Well, let's move on to another story. We've been hearing a lot about scams during this pandemic. The St. Louis County School District faced one. What happened there?
Yeah, this was a kind of a surprise. On February 4th, apparently a scammer posing as the superintendent of the school district used a fraudulent email to obtain the W-2 forms of all 677 employees in the district. And the superintendent sent a letter to staff that same day once they discovered this, announcing what had happened. And obviously people are concerned because those W-2 forms include things like, your address, your social security number, all these kinds of things that would be, beneficial if you were trying to steal somebody's identity. And of course, we've got those issues happening all the time. And so this is obviously putting those employees at risk of that. Now, Ingebrigtsen did point out that the superintendent of 2142 did point out that no personal banking information was obtained in the data breach. So it's not like the scammers are going to be able to access people's bank accounts. But even so, they're going to be monitoring bank accounts and, other types of information where, these scammers could potentially be making use of this information. And the district will be paying for, I think, at least 1 year and possibly two. They're trying to get information on what the costs on that are going to be. It does appear that the district does have insurance for this. But still, obviously, it creates some additional consternation for employees of the district now who have this stuff circulating out. Obviously, people are very much aware these days of the risks of these posed by these types of scams. And certainly 2142 is not the only school district that's been hit by this. I mean, we've got all kinds of businesses, institutions, universities, governments have been hit by these types of scams repeatedly. And I'm sure this won't be the last such story we'll be reporting.
All right. Well, the last 2 weeks when I've talked to you, it's been markedly colder than it is today. Can you talk a little bit about that cold snap that we had and the implications?
Yeah, well, it was definitely an impressive cold snap. We didn't set a whole lot of records, but, we had a few that kind of popped up in a few isolated locations. It wasn't like we had our, state record threatened by any stretch of the imagination. So this wasn't the coldest cold snap we've had, in recent times. But it certainly was one of the longest. In fact, by going 10 days below zero, that was a mark that hadn't been reached since 1971. So it's this was the longest cold snap in 50 years up here. So that's nothing to sneeze at. So that was impressive. We did have one record that was set, and it hasn't been confirmed yet to our knowledge, but we did have a reading reported from an official weather station out near Snowbank Lake, and that's just that's east of Ely, about 20 miles, and they had a reading of minus 50. So that's chilly. I know we had plenty of minus 40s around our neck of the woods. We had a minus 42 at our house one morning, and those kind of temperatures were common some of those nights, especially last weekend. I think that was kind of the coldest day, that Saturday of last weekend. And some of the implications are, I know in the city of Winton, which is a pretty small town, but they had major issues with water mains freezing and breaking. They had multiple breaks, and they had water shut off in town there for a couple days at least while they were trying to deal with that. And, of course, you know, it was continuing to be cold, so it made it more difficult to, you know, there's nothing worse than having to repair, you know, water mains, you know, when it's 25, 30 below. That's when you always feel for those public works guys. in any case, they eventually got water flowing again. But in the meantime, individual residences and businesses are now having to, in many cases, run water, or being encouraged to. I know in Ely, they certainly are encouraging people to run their water to prevent waterline freeze-ups. Which they're starting to see now. And, you know, we had gotten, you know, through the winter so easily because it had been so mild up until this stretch. But, 10 days of those kind of temperatures, they can really push that frost down and start making problems. So we may be having these problems for a while. And, of course, as some of the city officials in Ely pointed out, you know, once you have that ground frozen, it doesn't really thaw until well into the spring. In fact, generally, you figure you have to continue to run your water. The rule here is if you're worried about frozen lines, you run your water until the ice is off the lakes in the spring. So you may be in for a while yet.
Yeah, we have been hearing reports of people having frozen septics and all of that as well. So, oh, God.
And it hasn't been helped in many cases by the fact that we've had limited snow cover. So normally if you got a couple feet of snow on the ground, you know, that can really help to protect the septic systems. But, you know, with the limited snow, that's certainly going to be a bigger problem.
Well, before we go, some good news. The sled dog race in Ely's going on, right?
Yes, and that's kind of an exception. I think it's one of only two sled dog races, at least major ones, that are going to be run in Minnesota this year. We had the Bear Grease here a week or so ago, and now we are going to have the Wolf Track Classic, and that will be starting in Ely on Sunday, and folks might want to tune into that. It's not going to be open for spectators, at least at the finish and at the start line, but if people want to keep track of the racers, they'll be able to do that online, and they could go to the website for the Wolf Track Classic. Just Google Wolf Track Classic Sled Dog Race, and you will get right to that. Or you can go to their Facebook page as well, and you can kind of monitor the race on Sunday.
All right. Sounds great. So you're going back to cross-country skiing now? With warmer weather?
I am. I was out yesterday, and I'll be going again today.
All right. Sounds great. It's Marshall Helmberger. This has been the Border News Roundup. You can read and see more at timberjay.com. Marshall, thanks so much. We'll check in next week.
Sounds great. Thanks, Heidi.
There was 40 feet between them when they stopped to make their play. And the swiftness of the Ranger is still talked about today. Texas red and not clear leather, for a bullet fairly ripped.